The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody. We're at this great conversation. I'm like, you know, sitting here. I don't even have to put anything in my coffee today. So I'm just living off the vibe from Tim and Don and Jen right now. Jen Psaki, former White House press secretary under President Biden and the host of Inside with Jen Psaki on MSNBC. Don Callaway, an attorney, Democratic strategist and contributor, and one of my colleagues as a contributor at MSNBC. And of course, my old friend, Tim Miller, writer at large at The Bulwark, MSNBC political analyst, former political director for Republican Voters Against Trump and communications director for Jeb Bush, all back in the barbershop, beauty salon with us, having a great conversation. So before we went to break, Don, you had opened up a little bit before you made your last point, this idea about the white voters out there. Jen, you talked about that connection to folks out there and how it all kind of comes together. The reality of it is when we're looking at the Ramaswamis and others who are emerging narratively in the political space, you have this growing effort by a majority of GOP candidates, and this includes Tim Scott and Nikki Haley, people of color, making an appeal to GOP white conservative base voters and even non-GOP white conservative base voters, and how they've downplayed the existence of racism in the country, how they have narratively sidestepped or ignored the bullshit educational policies out of Florida right now, where, oh, guess what? My great granddaddy actually got job skills from being a slave. How does this approach impact those voters out there? How do they see, you know, and read this? Tim, you sit in a lot of you know, focus groups and working, as you just said, in the field at various party events. What are you hearing and seeing out there with this ongoing narrative around race that seems to excite a lot of white folks and potentially could depress a win next year?
Yeah, I'll be fast. I have one a negative and a positive on this front. Here's the negative. Vivek, I think, is a prime example. Nikki and Tim Scott do this too, but in a less obnoxious way. So I don't know if you all know this, but Vivek has his 10 commandments, his 10 truths. You know, mm-hmm. He ends every speech with them. And one of his 10 truths, big, for people aren't watching on YouTube, big air quotes here, is reverse racism is racism. And like, and that is a big applause line in Iowa, a big applause line. And I just think that is gives away the game here, right? That it's not like one of my truths is racism is a problem and we need to deal with it. Even if sometimes white people are being discriminated against. Now, I'm not big on white racism thing, but if you were making that point, then at least you're like, okay, this guy's trying to make an argument. That's not the argument he's trying to make. It's a pure pander. It's just reverse racism against is racism. You guys are the victims, actually. White people are the victims.
Right.
And that lands with a certain class of white voters. I do think, though, we saw in 2020 following George Floyd, and we saw this in our Bulwark focus groups, that when you get into that swing voter category, back to that Atlanta dad that we're talking about and mom, I'm not trying to, you know, leave anybody out here, but like, they don't really love that. You know, and I think that is encouraging. And the group of people, my people, the people that have left the GOP, you and our people, Michael, white folks in the suburbs don't love this shit. Mm-hmm. And I think that it actually backfires among swing voters. So like you know, on net, how does that balance, right? It's activating, I think, working class whites, and it's activating the Republican base in a big way. It's harming them with gettable college educated voters. You know, where does that land on net? You know, I'm not so sure, but I do think that it cuts both ways.
Don, what's your take on that? This idea that, you know, the GOP candidates and the GOP writ large is making a very concerted and deliberate effort to court and bring back into the fold or elevate inside the political space, the conservative white base that really doesn't want to hear anything about race right now.
Yeah. And the way they do that is by these deeply committed conservative faces of color who are willing to say the wild thing. You know what I mean? Like they're willing to go and you get that with a Vivek, but that's not a new thing. We've seen that since the Tea Party, 2009, 2010, you started to see the African-American candidate with these wildly, if you could not see their faces, you would think they were members of the Klan, right? And so if you've been around long enough, you can kind of see this character popping up. Byron Donalds is doing it right now in Florida. He just doesn't have the platform of a presidential campaign. And you've seen it kind of.
I think he's on the VP shortlist. That Byron
there you
Donalds.
Go, right? And that actually goes back to something that I've seen over the last 20 years being in politics. The line to shine as a person of color is much shorter on the Republican Party, right? And right. then once you get into the line of civic leadership, you can be elevated in this moment by being willing to say the craziest thing possible. Unfortunately, for most of these folks in 2023, Black folks are A, allowed to read, and B, we have access to the Google. So I know that I just happen to know that when Nikki Haley came over to this country, and her parents, as a first-generation immigrant, it was a Black college, Voorhees College, who gave her brown daddy a job as a college professor when he would not have gotten one at the University of South Carolina or Clemson or anywhere else. But she tells us that HBCUs don't matter, right? Her mama and grandmother opened a store called Exotica, had two locations, Orangeburg and Bamberg, South Carolina. Population of white folks between the two of them, about 50 people. And so it was Black women who supported her small business making dresses and trinkets and costume jewelry, right? But she won't talk about that part because she knows that the electorate in a Republican primary doesn't want to hear that. Right. So there are fundamental truths that are like provable, right? That go against these narratives they're saying, but it really kind of all goes into them buying into what they think the character of a politician has to be, like the persona of a Republican politician has to be. And it really makes you wonder, do y'all even really believe this?
Right.
Do you even really believe this stuff? And I just find that fascinating when you consider all three of them. I do think that Tim Scott is a deeply committed, charactered conservative, right? He believes this stuff in his heart. But I think that part of playing the role to succeed in his party is he has to deny some things in exchange for certain votes.
Jen, how do you read this right now?
Well, I mean, first of all, having worked for Barack Obama for 10 years, we can just go back to that a whole period of time and remind ourselves when there was a whole push on the right and right wing Twitter sphere that he was born in Kenya. It had nothing to do with like moving the anti-Kenya constituency in the country, right? It was like, hey, everybody, this is a Black man running for president, right? Right.
I'm raising my hand. I was fooled. I thought the Tea Party was about spending. That's my bad. I'm just throwing that. I'm throwing myself on the mercy of the court on that.
I could share a few meetings that I had with them over during that time. And yeah, I thought it was about the Constitution.
So. I mean, go figure. And now this also again, right? Now I have Tim is the focus group Sarah Longwell and others do are so interesting and I think tell us so much and are so important to listen to when people are putting their heads in the sand. But I've heard and I've talked to the Biden campaign and team about this question of like this argument that you hear anecdotally that if you vote for Joe Biden and that you are electing Kamala Harris, is it sticking out as a problem in your focus groups and in your, you know, polling? At this point, they say no for the reasons Tim outlined. Right. Now, sometimes, as we all know, anecdotal things aren't quite there yet and how we're seeing them in polls and data. But let's remind ourselves again what this is all about. They are kind of like killing two birds with this stone here. They are trying, what they want people to hear is Kamala Harris is Black and she's a woman and Joe Biden is going to die. He's so old, right? Yep. That is what this is all about, right? It is not about whether or not the vice president is a good vice president or not, right? First of all, there's no one in that administration who has elevated the abortion issue more than Kamala Harris. So right. People who think that that is an issue Democrats are going to vote on, that is something that she has elevated. It is not about that. It is about she is a Black woman and this is scary. And Joe Biden is old and he's probably going to die. Well, now, that's not what they say, but that is what they want people to hear.
To your point, though, Jen, and Nikki Haley has actually emphasized that when she has said, you know, that this election is not about, you know, is a vote for Joe Biden is a vote for Kamala Harris. And, quote, that should send a chill down every American spine.
Right.
And my question is, so why would voting for the Black woman scare you more than voting for the white man?
Or the person who's the president, who, however you feel about it, whether you've watched Veep or not, is more powerful than the vice president. Yes, this is like, and the problem, there's lots of problems with this, but one of the problems is when I hear people talk about this anecdotally, it's like they justify for themselves their own biases, right? And they'll say, the thing is that Kamala Harris just doesn't have that much experience and Joe Biden is the oldest president. And you're like, I think what you're justifying there for yourself is the fear of a Black woman having power and also justifying this argument that Joe Biden is old, even though he was literally a senior in college when Donald Trump was a freshman. So like, you know, so I think it doesn't mean it's not going to be effective, even if the data and the focus groups don't show it quite yet. And I think Tim's point is a really important one because, you know, even though millions, everybody has unconscious bias out there in the country, like suburban men and women, white men and women do not want to be affiliating themselves with clear racism, which this right. is, right?
right?
Even if they have unconscious bias. But I don't know. It is concerning because it's like, does this work at some point? I don't think we know yet.
Don, you're twisting over there a little bit. What's up?
Yeah.
You're squirming in the chair, dude.
Go ahead, Don.
I can't get the fade right if you're moving.
You know, I am heartened by Tim and Jen's point that ultimately it won't penetrate. But unfortunately,
we don't know, Don.
Yeah. That's what. Look.
Yeah. All I'm saying is it cut both ways in 2020. That's really what I was saying. This could be a different animal.
We've seen it cut both ways forever. I mean, look, the grab her by the blank tape was out there in 2016, right? And he still won. And so my experience as a middle-class Negro is that I can never count on, you know, I can never count on the demographic we're talking about.
No,
right?
You can't.
To do the right thing. I can't count on it. Now, Michael, your experience might be different. Frankly, you were an elected statewide. By the way, I just want to point out for my best cocktail party trick is that I can name every African-American statewide officer that ever existed. And Michael Steele did that a long time ago, way before I started counting. So for you to have pulled off statewide office as a very clear Black man, not trying to tap dance and all of that, maybe your experience in, you know, the particular demographic of Atlanta suburban dad, I guess you call them Bethesda dads, maybe your experience is different, but our actual life experience doesn't suggest that we can count on these messages not resonating. Hillary Clinton is an amazing person who has done remarkable things and by any objective human metric has led an extraordinary life. But she's also been the victim of a 30-year smear campaign such that good Democrats, good liberals are like, I don't know if Hillary's the one. I don't know if she's likable. And that stuff translates to voting booths more so than we ever have we ever really given real credit to. And so you know, in a universe where white men have not voted Democratic since John F. Kennedy, 1960, I can't rely on that. And that's why we have to continue to empower those black women doing the organizing.
Yeah, Don, I think all of that so important. And first of all, I'm not even betting. We shouldn't bet for white women to vote for the Democrats.
Well, I was going to say.
They also don't.
White suburban females have not been the most promising voting block for Democrats.
But I think the thing that I've heard that's concerning is I hear a lot of Democrats repeat this talking point about Kamala Harris. So that is the piece that is also concerning, right? Like Democrats will say, well, the challenge is that it's really working, that the argument that, you know, if you vote for Joe Biden, you're electing Kamala Harris. So I think that's also a root problem because you're kind of like taking it on and repeating it as fact and truth. And while we all have to be like eyes wide open, as Tim says, and like really talk about all the things that are alarming, the repetition of that is also working for what the conservatives are trying to do because Democrats are convincing themselves it's a problem to have Kamala Harris on the ticket when there's no evidence to suggest that's
true. Can I just say, I there's been a little bit of this sort of abortion and Ben LeBolt's going to start, my buddy is going to start throwing tomatoes at me if he makes it this far in the podcast, but like we could see a little more of Kamala. I know they're doing, it's, I know we're seeing more of her than we were seeing last year, but I do think that there are going to be some people that are not get that are going to be susceptible to this talking point because of unconscious or conscious bias, no doubt.
Right.
There are other people out there that I think want to be there for Kamala. Some of the Democrats you're talking about, Jen, you know, who are repeating the talking about, some of the independent swing voters, some of the Romney Biden voters, but aren't feel uncertain, right? Because the only thing they're seeing is the gaffe clips that Fox puts up, right? Yeah. And she's been doing more on abortion. That's good. But I would like to see, I'd like for August 30th to Christmas to see more Kamala. I'd like to see her with Lester Holt.
They need to lean into her leadership more. They need to profile her more. And just
Don saying maybe this is wrong.
I mean, but let's keep it 1,000. You know, there are two brothers that went off. There are two brothers. One went off to sea, the other became vice president, and neither were ever heard from again, right? So historically, the vice presidency is a very, very difficult position from which to establish oneself as leadership. As John McCain once told Sarah Palin, there is no vice presidential campaign, right? And we have to understand it. So it is a creative alchemy of public affairs, Jen's role, to try to find a role to properly elevate her, but not elevate her above the president, to make her look intellectual, but not like an angry black woman. All the other stuff comes into play here. This is, I would love to see more of her, but I don't want to see the administration put her in a position where we say, hey, you go solve the border crisis, right? Because that's like saying, hey, go solve Israeli Palestine. That's not a winnable task. And then you set her up to not look like a public success.
Hey, everybody, thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Is it just me, or have we all lost our minds? It's a question more and more people are asking themselves, afraid to admit they already know the answer. It's also a podcast, one about people coming together in a time of division and uncertainty to talk about culture and politics, compromise and connections. It's about challenging the norms we've come to accept as a society and working together to find common ground. Fierce and Unfiltered, host Jennifer Horn is a former Republican strategist and party leader turned independent sanity activist. One way or another, we've all lost our minds. Join Jennifer Horn in the search to find them again.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.